Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah. And on this episode, I'm giving you an author spotlight quick shot edition of Buzzing About Romance. I don't know what I'm saying here. I totally messed that up. But on this author spotlight,
You're good.
It is a morning, apparently.
We know. We had a dog fight. We had waking up late. We had a diarrhea puppy. If we get it.
Hence the 9:30 instead of 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's try this again. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah. On this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I'm joined by Jack and Jacinda Wilder. Welcome to the podcast.
Yay. Excited to be back.
Many of you don't know that Jacinda Wilder is a New York Times bestselling author, but she is an author duo. It is her and her husband, Jack. He is there, but in the background.
Yes.
But not really glowing in the background at all.
Glowing.
Yeah, glowing in the background.
So before we talk about your newest release, Too Pucking Old for This, let's get to know you two a little bit.
Okay.
So what initially drew you to the romance genre as writers?
You know, I really only enjoy a storyline, and it's not just reading, it's movies, TV, unless there's some kind of romantic element. And I always have. I remember when I was like 10 or 11, my mom used to get like a book of the month box.
My mom used to get those too.
Jackie Collins, like Nora Roberts back then, anything that I could get my hands on that had a romantic element, I was reading. Like, that was just, I loved it. I used to reenact Star Wars. I was always Princess Leia. You know, that please come get me, I love you, you know, that kind
I
of
know.
stuff. I was so into that. So it just never, I never grew out of it. And actually I think it's like more and more and more and more, the more that I get older. Cause for me, romance and love is hope, is joy, is all the things good in the world. So I'm just so drawn to that. I can't write anything or watch or any experience things without that. I need it. I crave it. So
when I was young, my mom and I were the voracious readers in the family.
Still are.
And still are.
Yeah.
And so every week, my mom and I would go to our local library and we would pick out books. And, you know, I would get a stack that was the max number of books they would let you take out of the library, and I would devour them. And then I would be out of books before we were ready to go back, because I couldn't go unless my mom took me, obviously. So I would start reading whatever my mom had already read or hadn't read yet.
Okay.
And when we were at the library, we were always in different sections. So I never knew where she got them or what she was looking at. And I would just go by the cover. And I would just, you know, just pick it up and start reading.
So what was 8-year-old Jack reading? Outlander.
Yes.
Outlander is what this guy was reading.
And I still remember very clearly, I had read like 3 or 4 of the Outlander books, however many were out at the time.
Okay.
And we were at a bookstore and I saw them in the romance section and I stopped.
Shocked.
Audibly gasped. Shocked. And was like horrified because, you know, macho teenage Jack was like, I'm reading romance books?
Well, and Baptist pastor daddy, who did not know that mom and young son were reading romance. So that's
romances.
Also, yeah.
Because I, you know, and I remember reading through them and being like, ooh, this is, okay.
Spicy.
Spicy. But I just eventually sort of accepted it, and that became the way we did it. And so my mom are always, you know, tag team reading the same series.
Yeah. And even before we were dating, we were best friends.
Yes.
Okay.
And we used to always share books because that's what we did. And we were always reading Shapeshifter books. Like, that was a thing. And there was super spicy scenes in those. And we would discuss them and, like, you know, would you do this that way? Would this work? That was just like our normal, like,
Carolyn
lunch talk.
Kenyon series and G.R. Ward.
Yeah. We discussed all the time. That was just always what we were talking about. That's just what we do. I can't imagine life without it. It's just what we love. We love writing about love and
I
reading
can
about
still
love.
Read and enjoy sci-fi, fantasy, history, whatever. if it doesn't have it in there, but I enjoy it more when there is an element of that. It doesn't have to be the main focus, like a romance. It's about
Right.
the
Just
romance.
something in the background.
I like something in there because that's a human connection. All of us as humans crave love, hardwired by whatever you believe in as
Correct.
ha having gotten us in existence in the world,
Right.
to crave that connection, no matter who it's to. We need that. It's part of our psyche. It's part of how we're built to need that connection. So I think every story about humans needs an element of that because that's one of the most basic and integral part of the human experience.
For sure.
So have you always, like, I personally know the answer to this question, but a lot of our listeners do not. But have you always written together? Have you ever written separately?
We actually started out writing separately because we were writing for school and work. I was a theater director at a children's theater,
Okay.
and I was often writing scripts, monologues, plays for my students because there's just not that much material out there, or there wasn't, 20 years ago, that was appropriate for, them. So I was always writing stuff. And he was in school getting his English degree. He was teaching, and he was writing all kinds of short stories, really, is
Okay.
what took him, he got awards for short stories that he wrote. And then we didn't really even contemplate it again, other than, we would discuss books we would love to write someday, until our youngest at the time, our youngest son, got very, very sick. And it basically just changed our entire life because we realized he couldn't go back to school because we had, at the time, when our youngest got sick, then our next one up got also sick, and they were two separate hospitals. And so we both were there full time,
Right.
basically, with one of the kids. So we, out of desperation, because both of us were worried about income, said, "Hey, why don't we just try this? I mean, there's nothing else to lose at this point. We're going to lose our house and not be able to feed our kids if we don't think of something." And it
Right.
was Upperware or self-publishing. What are we
Yeah.
going to
In my
do?
case, it was a choice between, I was at the stage in my teaching program where they had to place me with as my, my final student teaching, which was right when all this was
Starting
happening.
happening.
And, the university, to their credit, gave me as much time as they possibly could,
Yeah,
down to
right. Last second.
days or weeks, almost like past the deadline, really. But eventually it got to the point where I'm sorry, but you have to be
Be
here,
here.
part of the program, or you have to try again next
Right.
year.
Right.
And at that point, we couldn't,
And it was a very, very, like, exclusive, special honors program that if he were to give up a spot, there was 100 people waiting for it. You know what I mean? So he also felt bad about that because we didn't know how long this was going to continue. But yeah, it was kind of more like out of necessity. We never thought that we would be able to, take care of our family, raise our kids, doing what we loved. It just never seemed like it would be a possibility until we were like, we got nothing else we can do. Might as well try this. And it
It
worked. It
panned
took off.
out.
Yeah, it panned out
I
for
really
sure.
never thought because I'd looked into it. I've been writing in one capacity or another since eighth grade. Started in eighth grade, a health class of all things, an assignment to do like a 3-page short story about some theme that was regarding, a health class. And I just sort of went off, got
Yeah.
cooking, as the kids like to say these days.
And
And
30 pages later.
I think it was like it was supposed to be three, and I wrote eight, which
Yeah.
for seventh, eighth grade is a
Which
lot.
is still happening because I'll always, when I, start our project, I'm like, let this will probably be about maybe like 80,000 words. Let's keep it around there.
120
And then
later.
120, 140 later, I'm like, we need to edit the crap out of this because someone ran long. So it's still happening. I'm always trying to like reel it in a little bit, but he just gets
Yeah, I get
too
excited about
wordy.
it. But, my whole life reading, I'd read several books by writers about writing and heard all the horror stories of I, wallpapered my office with rejection slips. And, up until we were at the forefront of the indie publishing movement or revolution or whatever you want to call it. And up until that happened, it's like such a distant pipe dream for so many people to go through the traditional route to get your book even seen by an agent.
And it sucks because it's still happening. I mean, that's what bothers me. We have kids that are in college. And they're all fighting the, we want to be creative artists, but we also want to be able to feed ourselves. And I hope there's a period of time, maybe with this whole AI thing coming through, we'll realize like we need more creatives. I'm not sure, but it's a bummer for me that these kids are just feeling like they cannot support themselves and be artists. I really hate that. I hope it changes. And I feel like, you know, when we started this whole thing, that was what inspired me to, I mean, not the writing part of it, but like the get out there and talk about it part of it. And this, because I really wanted that to change. I want it to change in the theater world. That's where I come from, is the theater world. And I know how much Broadway's suffering right now. And you know, art, artists, you know, visual artists, graphic designers, all those kinds of art, that is what makes us human for me. And so I really hope that that changes at some point. I do think that this publishing journey we've been on and the ability to self-publish crack that open a little bit, but I just want there to be more artist stability in terms of being able to take care of yourself and not having to be a side hustle. I all the time, you know, we talked to these writers that had several New York Times bestsellers, you know, these women that were 70, 80 years old that had been writing their whole lives for like Harlequin and all other these publishers, and were never able to actually have that be
Their
their job.
full-time
It
job,
was literally just like, oh, a little extra money on the side. And these are women that are the most talented, phenomenal writers. I mean, mind blowing. And it just was always really hard for me to swallow that they were struggling so hard still with these New York Times, you know, best-selling
Remember
books.
we talked to a lady at one of the first romance RWA that we ever went to. And this was a woman who was like one of the backbone writers for
Harlequin.
Harlequin her entire life. Literally, she had almost as many books as we do now,
More, I think,
more,
yeah.
I think. And literally every single book she had ever written had landed on the New York Times list somewhere. Maybe not always at the top, but
But it was
every
on that list
single New
somewhere.
York Times, every
Consistently.
single one, and she still at 80 years old was still working part-time because she couldn't. That is a travesty.
So I that's one of the things that I hope, you know. If I was in control of the world, I'd be like, you know what? We need these people that are the backbone and what keeps us happy and joyful. Like, we need that, especially in times like these where you're like, gosh, reality really is hard. I need an escape. Whew. Let's dive into a book. You know, let's dive into some art. And it really is, I think, so important. And I want that for my kids. That's really what I want for my
And as
kids.
artists, what I want is freedom for artists to be able to create what motivates them and what inspires them without that being gatekept and controlled by people who just want to increase their bottom line. Not trying to make it political, but we just have so many places in the world, in the industries, where people at the top aren't really caring about what the content producers are doing as long as it makes them money. If you make money, fine, whatever. But the second that what you're doing infringes on their bottom line, they'll shut you down. Nowhere more obvious than in the publishing industry, where if they can't neatly fit you into a very pat and easily identifiable marketing
Box.
box, you have no place. You have nowhere on the shelf. They won't even talk to you. And art doesn't fit into boxes.
No, it doesn't.
And we certainly don't. I mean, that's why this book that we just published, Too Pucking Old for This, we specifically wrote it because during COVID, we had all these meetings with publishers, specifically about The Cabin, because we had movie interest with that book, and they wanted us to bring a publisher on board. And strangely, we couldn't get a publisher on board because they were, it's women fiction with too much spice. Take spice out, change this, change that, change the characters. And we have gotten that almost every time we've talked to the publishers. This needs to be changed. This doesn't fit into, you know, one of our subgenres perfectly. So we need you to change this. Change the color of the person, change the age of the
And you're
person.
like, I don't want to do that. Like
I'm like,
this,
this
I
is the
made this
people I
for a
know.
reason.
Right. This is what we want to write. So I think, you know, that has been really weighing on our minds because one of the things we kept getting was that our demographic was much older than the traditional romance reader. And I don't know why that is exactly, other than I think that we might write a little bit more literary, which is kind of weird for the romance genre. My husband likes big words. Unfortunately, it's funny because I'm always like, okay, I can go with that. That's all right. I know what that means. Then sometimes he'll pull out something that I'm like, babe, unless you're going to give a definition of that word somewhere, like we're not going to put the romance book down in the middle of, spicy times to pull out a dictionary and figure out what you're trying to say.
I
So,
was, not to interrupt, but I was doing an edit for an author a couple weeks ago, and I like got to this word, and like I actually had to look it up because I thought that I knew what it meant, but I wasn't sure. So I looked it up, and my note was, while this word works, 90% of your readers will have to look it
don't
up. You
know it.
may want to
Right.
dumb it down a little bit.
Right. That, and we get that all the time. But I do know that, there are women out there that email me every single day in their 60s, in their 70s, that love that aspect of our writing. And so, yes, we are a little bit quirky in terms of who is coming to read our material, but I think that's part of what sets us apart. And when I was kind of listening to this one specific person tell me about our demographics, gonna die one day, gonna die, so we need to start writing
Our audience
younger.
is going to
And
die
I'm
out.
like, honey, that's how old I am. Like, you're talking about me. So if I'm dead, I'm not really sure that's gonna bother me too much, and I'll leave that to my kids to worry about, and so we really then kind of, whenever, I guess it's part of like my personality, when someone tells me, like, stop doing that, I'm like,
You
oh,
dig in.
here we
Oppositional
go.
defiance.
Yeah, thank you so much. Here we
Let's
go.
do that times a
Yeah,
hundred.
so we wanted to write some more books that had that second chance older couple, people that gave up on love, because quite honestly, that's what speaks to us. We love that redemption love story. We had that with each other. And so, like, that's what we know, that's what we love to write. And I really feel like there's just such a missing part of the romance industry with these readers that have, I mean, I remember we talk about this all the time. His grandmother and one of the people in my family that was older was literally always carrying around a stack of romance books. Like, we would go up north, and here's a box of romance books going with us. And so I think they're kind of like cutting out a whole group of people that
Who
are romance
want to be reading that?
readers. Right,
For me, it
right.
was my great grandmother. We lived with her for quite a few years, and
With the Baptist pastor's
with a
son, by
Baptist
the
pastor, and I don't know where she got them because she
She
never left the
smuggled them
house.
in. She smuggled them
But
in.
maybe she just had a stash of them, but
She
she
had
would
a source.
Yep,
Yep.
bodice rippers, and she would read them in her bedroom, in her bed. And then if
Under the
my
covers.
dad came in, she would cover him with the blankets real quick because she was embarrassed or knew
Right.
my dad wouldn't approve or whatever it was. And I vividly remember that still of, seeing my grandmother reading these spicy bodice ripper romance novels that was what she loved doing, and she was in her 90s at the time.
Right. Women are getting in their prime then, right? I mean, we want that. And so I just feel like I wanted to give our readers what they wanted. Why would we give them something different? We didn't want to start writing young. And that's my daughter's demographic, and she's a voracious romance reader, and I know what she's reading. And us, she's reading something totally different. So instead of us trying to write in a voice that's not, isn't us, isn't
Well,
authentic.
and that's the thing. Like, if you have a voice for a certain style of writing, you should not
Right.
feel forced to change that because then it's not authentic.
Right. And obviously someone's reading. I mean, we've sold 10 million books. So somebody's reading it. And so I'm not just gonna alienate them by changing, shifting, and writing something different. So really wanted to kind of lean into that.
So my mom, she got the Harlequin like mailer every month. Like, I started reading romance way before I probably should have. And so it's funny now because my mom is 72. So we will sit at swim meets or at the house, and like I pull out her Kindle and I start going through it. I'm like, oh, wait, you read this author. Let me give you this author. So like I give her like all these recs. And so it's like my mom is reading. Like, I mean, there are some things I would never recommend to her just because I know it's not her thing. But like other ones, I'm like, you haven't read this person yet. You need to go read them because
Check
you
it
will
out.
really enjoy them. But like she reads a vast variety of ages too. Like she doesn't read as many like youngers just because like she's older. Like it doesn't,
Well,
like she doesn't want to be reading that.
my mom will pass books to my daughter and vice versa. My mom is just like, hey, I love the element of romance too. So I feel like it's something we have like this connotation that it's something you grow out of or something. I don't
No,
know.
you never grow
Oh,
out of it.
right. If you love love, if you love reading those kinds of stories, I think that's like a birth to death kind of situation. You don't just one day go, oh, you know what? I'm just going to only read this now. Like it doesn't make sense. So we wanted to give our readers, especially, you know, again, it's something that they are asking for, something that they want. We want to give that to them. So we wrote this book specifically because we knew that, you know, hockey and sports romance, we really had kind of just done on the edge of that. We did a little bit of that in Falling Into Us, a little of that in Big Hose, but this specifically was a sports romance, but with older couple and with kind of a little bit of a twist that tugged at your heart and then also. We wanted to give you all of that.
Well, and with this book, it is like hockey romance, but it's not your typical hockey romance because it's like a once a year like charity hockey game. So, and like it ties into the whole like balance of the story as well because like the charity is for the hero's wife who had passed away, which that's not a spoiler. It happens at the very beginning of the book and like the whole premise of it. But it's like, so you have that hockey, but it's not the typical style, which I really enjoyed because it's very much like a background of like who these people are. And like I'm assuming we're going to get the son eventually because he is a big part of the story and he did play professional hockey, but he's not really playing at all now. And so it's like that whole premise of it. But I love the fact that these characters are older.
Good. Good. That's what we want to hear. I mean, we love not we have, you know, we were part of the new adult romance wave. Not that we don't love that. And specifically because, you know, again, as a romantic and as a mom, I get excited about knowing that my kids are falling in love. Like that we've never seen that before until recently. And I'm like, oh, because that inspires us too. Everything that we write has an inspiration at the core of something happening in our lives. That's just how it's always been. And so we still want to write that. So that's where you're going to see the son a little bit more coming into this. And we love writing Next Generation of the Bad series. We love that. So fun. But, you know, we also still want to give you that not just young people are falling in love, not just young people want to fall in love. So we want to give that whole just experience of everyone deserves love. And you're going to see that more coming from us with more diverse characters too. You know, we have been holding on to some stories that we've been scared to write, quite honestly. One that is a LGBTQ character that was part of the Falling series. We have plans to finally write that book because I feel like the winds are kind of changing in terms of acceptability of LGBTQ, and that's just kind of how it is. And we have an LGBTQ child, and we feel like this is a story we want to tell, and we think it should be told. We've wanted to tell it, but we just feel like that's something that we can do now. We have a lot of neurodiversity in characters that we've written recently. Our Light Up the Night that we released in December, Bad Boy. These are characters that, again, we know from our family,
I was gonna
from
say, you're a very neuro spicy family.
I'm autistic, ADHD. We have half of our, actually more than half of our kids are neurodiverse. So we want to have those characters included in these stories because I just feel like there's so many types of people that are left out because the demographic is 18 to 20 something year old white, you know, straight. And not to say that there's anything wrong with that because there is a lot of that out there, but we just want to be a voice for people that are underrepresented or are kind of passed over. Because what's the point of being indie if you can't do that, if you can't make those decisions? And that's what I love about being able to do
My
this.
mom, her entire career, she was a nurse in nursing homes. And
I
I
know where this is going, and I'm quite scared. You might want to edit this part out. I know where this is going, but please go ahead.
I will be tactful about it, but one thing that she told me that really did surprise me, and she didn't tell me this until I was an adult, but the amount of sex that old
Sex.
people are
Oh
having
no, there's a
is
place in Florida like
Yes.
that was in the news recently, and it has like the highest STD rate because
Yes.
those old people are getting freaky.
That's
They're
what his
getting
mom
up.
was treating, was the STDs in the nursing
And
home.
so
Yes.
my point in saying that is, I don't think we're ever going to do like a nursing home romance,
You
but
never know.
you never know.
No.
I do think
Really
that
into you is re no. Okay, never mind.
there is something to be said for the fact that someone who's 70 or 80 or whatever has a much easier time identifying with a hero who's 40 or 50
Right.
than 19 or 22 or even 36.
Right.
Your life experience, you can identify with that because it's more recent to you.
Right.
Whereas even to me now, at my age, someone who's my daughter's age, I would have a harder time identifying with a character that's like that, as opposed to, somebody who's more like 30 or 36. You watch a movie that you watched as a kid, you identify more with the parents now than you do with the kid.
Yeah. Isn't
My
that a
God,
hard pill to
in the front,
swallow? Oh my gosh.
Daniel was a
Well,
dumbass.
we were watching Age of, well, I was watching Age of Attraction. He's too highbrow for those kind of shows. But I was
I've watched
so,
all your
stop.
nonsense
I
reality
was
shows for
so
20 years.
intrigued with these couples. Like, it just blew my mind. I was just, I don't know. I just couldn't believe what was happening because, I've watched a lot of Love is Blind, and that's always a disaster. I mean, that is just a crash and burn. You can't stop watching, but it's just yikes. But this show, most of the couples stayed together and were happy. And I was like, she's what, 50 something, and he's 20 something, and they are so in love, and it's authentic and it seems real. And I mean, I was just like, wow, this really shows you that love is such a complex, interesting, strange thing that as humans, we're always going to be trying to figure out.
Well, and I think in those kinds of shows, it shows that love is not one size fits all. Like, it
Correct.
doesn't, like,
Correct.
one thing does not work for somebody else. Like, there's not this perfect, like, ideal. Like, it's not a cookie cutter thing. Like, everybody loves differently and everybody loves somebody differently.
Yes. Well, even like it reminds me of our book Wounded, which I mean it hit the New York Times right early on, and then it kind of like fell because it was a wartime love. And the coolest thing for me about writing it is that the two characters couldn't communicate because they spoke different languages. And that was always so intriguing to me. And ironically, our daughter is dating someone who just is learning English. And I, like just watching it and realizing that like even in areas you can't communicate, there's something that is drawing these two together. And it's just so beautiful to see. It's beyond language. So I just think there's so many cool and different facets of romance that just, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it. I just get so excited thinking about that
There's
because
such
everyone
a
needs that.
the element of like je ne sais quoi to it, where you just can't identify what it is that causes it. What is the spark that's in me, that's in her, that caused us to recognize each other? We were friends first, and I think that was like the beginning of it and the
Took a
foundation of
lot
it,
for
but
us to
there was
recognize.
something in the two of us that just kept drawing us back
Like we
together.
like heck, we fought it like heck until our kids. We've told this story before, but our kids were in preschool and they had share time, and my daughter shared that we were going to get married, and the teacher literally stopped share time because she knew me, and she called me, and she was like, "Are you dating or going to marry Orion?" Because they were in the same preschool, his son and my daughter. Orion's dad? And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, like literally, she just announced it
To
in
the
share time
entire
to the entire
class.
class, which again, I knew all the moms of all the kids. I'm like, oh. So I call him, get off the phone, call him. And I was like, isn't this crazy? Like, that's the craziest thing. And he was like, I don't think that's so crazy. Ooh. So, it was just kind of that finally, after we had bought it for what? I mean, 7 years, that kind of like we kept getting drawn. Eh. And then, but there's something about that that's just magic. It's magic to me. And I just feel like there's never going to be a time where I'm going to get sick of it.
You better ask a question or we'll just keep on
Oh,
blabbing
no, this
down
is
every spot
fine.
in the
I
world.
love when this happens because it's less work for me.
You can't get us to stop talking. That's the problem.
No,
She's a
honestly,
PhD.
like, I'm Welsh.
Yes.
Can't
There
stop
you go.
talking. Well, no, these are, I tell every author that I talk to, like, these spotlight episodes are some of my favorite things to do because everybody, like, they just have such a different foray into romance. They have a different style of writing. They have a different reason for writing. These are my favorite things, and I talk away. I do not mind at all.
Don't tell him to talk away. I'm
Oh God,
telling you,
no.
please. Oh gosh. That's dangerous. That's very dangerous.
So when you guys are writing, what is the process like? Do you have a plan from point A to point B? Do you plot it out? Do you pants? Who does the bulk of the writing versus who kind of comes in and tweaks? Or do you have like a method in the way you do it?
It's
Okay,
so
I'm sorry.
complicated. And I've always said I would never be able to do this with anybody else. And I want to also say a preface because I get on Threads sometimes. Social media is really hard
Oh,
for
it is
me.
the Wild Wild West over there.
Really hard for me, but I get on Threads sometimes and I see a lot of authors basically saying, whoever started this whole write fast and just keep writing and don't stop writing, ruined a lot of authors because now everyone thinks you have to do that. And I know a lot of people are referencing me because when we first started writing, we were writing a book every month. Like that was just still we do pretty couple every couple months. We put a book out. And I realize now, and I didn't know then, I've always known that I had ADHD or suspicion. And then it was more confirmed as I kept growing. I'm like,
I'm
oh yeah,
going for
coming out.
testing like soon, so.
Right. And then I found out, surprise recently, spoiler alert, that I'm also autistic. So that's a very interesting mix. And now what I want to say to everyone is I'm sorry. I realize now that this is literally just the way my brain functions. I get so into the zone, I get so hyper fixated on something. I have to do it this way. And there's no other way to do it. So when I've always unique to us. People don't understand how we write together. I get it. It's weird. We are weird. We fully embrace that. People don't understand how we can write so quickly. I get that. It's just like, I want to for people to understand that when we were talking about our experiences, it wasn't so you need to do it this way because I don't believe that at all. I believe that this is the way we were able to do this. And
Again, one of the reasons I love these spotlights is because everybody's process is different.
yes, very much so. And I realize now that's kind of what propelled us was those things. I always say now that I know, like the best things in my life were because of my neurodiversity, and the worst parts of my life were because of my neurodiversity. Because it's such a spectrum of push and pull in terms of like I felt propelled without even being able to make a choice in some ways. And that's really kind of how our push to write and produce has been. Because I'm also like firstborn daughter workaholic, type situation too. So I'm always the one, well, she's exact opposite. I'm like,
She's
come on, we
got
gotta get a book out. Let's get a book out. Come, let's write, that kind of thing.
that going on where, she can hyperfixate on something. Not only can she hyperfixate, she just has a work ethic like no human being I've ever met in my
Unfortunately.
life, where she will work from the moment her eyes open until the moment they close. She's working on something. My approach is a little different, but as a kid, I was kind of, introverted and didn't really have many friends, and all I would do all summer long was sit on the corner of a couch reading a book. And so I could just sit there literally an entire day
I could do
and
that too,
book.
yeah.
When my son was young, I read an 850-page fantasy book in a single sitting. And so now it's nothing for me to sit and write for 8 hours and only get up to go to the bathroom a couple of times because I did that while I was reading.
Well, and I think the other important component of this that I think is really important for people to understand is that we read because, as a whole, both him and I were not accepted as who we were as children. We were just very hard to accept. I was ridiculed and bullied a lot because of my size and because I was different. Now I know, okay, in the 80s, being autistic and morbidly obese, not a good combo, just not a good combo to throw together. And he also was kind of like the black sheep, didn't really have a lot of friends, more introverted, and so our acceptance and our friends were our books. That's was our human connection was through books, which I know sounds a little bit sad, but it's just true.
But it's the reality for a lot of people.
And so that's where I think our passion was and why we still, we've talked about this all the time. I don't think we'll ever stop writing. Because, I mean, if we go on a date, what we're talking about is characters in our head. If we are, just sitting here on a Sunday morning and trying to relax, it never stops that it never fails that we don't start talking about a plot issue or something. It's just who we are. It's how even we connect with each other, and we always have. So I think that's just a unique personality to us. So I think, in terms of other writing, other writers, I just want to say You need to be authentically you. If you can write one book a year
Good for
and that's
you.
you, God, I like, congratulations, bless you. For me, it's like, again, the way my brain functions, I always have a dozen books in my head. And if I don't get them out, they yell louder. Like they get more aggressive. So that's why I was saying, sometimes I can't give the book that our readers want because one of these characters in my head is screaming so much louder than the rest. And so I have to get it out quick to get to that next one that people, it's just such a complex
It's
situation.
very similar for me. Like for my mental health, there's a few things I need on a regular basis, and two of the most important ones is I have to work out somehow, otherwise I just get cranky and impossible to live with.
Very much.
And I also have to write because at this point it's been a daily part of who I am and what I do, that if I don't work every day, not every day, but 5 3 4 5 days a week, it all builds up
Even at
inside
like,
me.
spring break. We have
Right.
spring break coming up with our kids. I guarantee we're going to do some work. We might not do as much as we usually do, but
Right.
we have to.
Well, but if everybody's home, there's a lot more like distraction. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I have squirrel brain, and like I'll start a task and then like one of the kids will say something, and I only have two, so it's not as chaotic. But when they're home, luckily, like with mine, like they're at an age where my daughter will sit in her room and read or talk to her friends, and my son is on his computer playing video games. And it's like they're doing their things. And so like we're at like a really great place because like they're not super
Needing
needy.
you every second. Yeah, that was a huge thing for us. And unfortunately, as soon as we got through that phase, we would have another child. Not sure what we were thinking. But now we're finally, our youngest is 10. It's starting to get like that.
No, there's no.
Oh no. Oh no. We learned that lesson. But it definitely is, especially again, my heart goes out to all these female writers that are also juggling motherhood and also juggling being a wife and being a partner. Like there's so much going on. And that's again, we talk about industries that are minority-owned, female-owned. The romance industry is an industry of female-owned businesses collectively. Like that again is another reason why I fight so hard and champion for our industry, because we are literally this group collective of minority and women-owned businesses. And I think, in the small bookstores too that are starting to open, most of them are
Are
women
women owned,
already owned. So I really just feel like this particular industry is so special, is so unique. You don't have it in any other
I have a
place.
ton of respect for, the women in the industry, because speaking as a man who is in the industry, I'm an outlier by far. But, and also just as a husband and a father, I see how much my wife does on a daily basis. And I know that's not abnormal in any way, shape, or
Of
form.
this industry.
So for an industry that is 99.99% women who are finding the time to sit down and write when they already have
Most
the
of them have
burden of our
jobs.
society on their shoulders, where they have all these expectations for, being the wife, being the mother, being the superwoman, can keep everybody's emotions together and get everybody where they have to go and do all these things that as men we can't fathom because our squirrel brains can focus on one task at a time. Not even that sometimes, maybe that's just me, but
Speak for yourself.
women are then also finding time to sit down and be creative, and not just be creative, but to write a book, to produce an entire book that somebody else wants to read is a massive accomplishment. Once ever. Just to produce a single book ever is a massive accomplishment. But to produce a single book on top of
All
everything
that.
else is an even more enormous accomplishment that I think it's not recognized enough.
Yeah, and that's why again, everyone is their own CEO of their business, but I see a lot when I get on social media that kind of makes it hard for me to then push it out of my mind and get back focused into my world, because I think a lot of times we are fighting with each other over things we shouldn't fight over. I mean, I saw a comment this week about, writers that aren't on social media interacting with their readers are not good writers. And I'm thinking, dude,
That
for
is
me,
such a fallacy.
I mean, it was all over Threads this week. And I'm like, you know what? Here's the issue that I have with that. What my readers want for me more than anything, and what I want my readers to remember me for, is my books and my
Right.
character. So for me, my time is best spent, and I found this out a long time ago. For me, my time is best spent putting out another book for my readers. I just know that's what they want from me more than anything. If I have extra time, absolutely. I love to jump on social media and interact with them. If it was up to me, I would just be in a giant room with all my readers all the time, talking about books, talking about characters, drinking a drink and having a snack. If I could just create my own world. But that's just not the reality, especially because a lot of us writers, again, are kind of like, you have to do this, you have to do this. Well, no, you have to take care of your family. You take care of yourself. That's the most important. And that's another thing that worries me when I get on Threads, is I see all these people not taking care of themselves.
Oh,
Honey, you have to take care of yourself, please.
Threads is a slippery slope. Like, there's so much on. Like, we joke that it is the Wild Wild West over there, and like,
Agreed.
we none of like I go on there very rarely because I can't handle it. Like, my mental like state when I am over there, I'm like, I cannot believe the things that people type and then put out into the world. Like, I don't get it.
I
And
agree. And
maybe it's my age, which I don't feel like I'm that old, but as I have come to see, I'm not as young as I like to
if you
pretend
thought you
I
were,
am.
yeah, right.
But like, I don't understand why, how people cannot censor themselves and like realize like this should not be something that I should be putting out into the world.
Well, not to be political, but there was a little shift in our, what we were accepting people to say and what we were, the silent things that we were not always saying,
Yeah, the
suddenly
quote.
now we just
Yeah,
explode
people say
out.
all the quiet things out loud
Right,
now.
right.
It's
At
acceptable to put the quiet parts out loud, even when the quiet part shouldn't be a quiet thing. It should be not a thing ever.
all,
But
right.
people just now think that it's okay to say anything that pops into their head without any thinking about it.
Censor or anything, yeah.
No censor, no censor. And again, I think that's happened too. We talk about often with what we're writing, we're trying to get more shock and more shock and more shock and more shock and more shock. I think that really shifted during COVID. And everybody's a cannibal now, and everybody's sleeping with their family members now. And I'm like, do we really have to go there? Like, maybe we don't need that. I don't know. But I do think, there is a society, a lot of times romance writing is kind of either at the forefront or right at whatever's kind of building up in our society. And it does make me a little bit nervous for future generations because it's not our age. I mean, my daughter, who's 20, is like, I cannot be on social media in the book world right now. And I'm like, that's so weird to me because it's all women, majority moms, who should all be supporting each other and lifting each other up, especially now, especially right now in this time. We need that. And it's like a teardown. And again, a lot of the authors that I am peers with, they're our age. They're our age. And we're all getting to this perimenopause hell, whatever
Oh,
this is.
it is
Whatever this
hell.
is. I'm like slathering myself with hormone cream every 10 minutes, like trying to get through this life. And I'm just like, let's just kind of just decide that we're going to be different. We're going to be the group that I see. Like when we go to a signing, we did one signing this year or last year in Philly. And oh my gosh, the love, I just felt this energy in that room of just happiness and joy and love and supporting each other. I want that. I want to see that on our social media. We could do that. We absolutely could do that. And I think some of us have to go, okay, nope, we're just not going to do this anymore. We're just going to be showing our children what we can, how we can make this different, how we can make accepting place, a loving place, understanding that everyone's different, understanding that we all love reading and that everyone can have a place here. Everyone can be here and it's okay. And if they're different, it's okay. It's all right.
There's a lost art, I think, of responding to hatred and vitriol with the opposite, because nothing kills hate so quickly as gentility. I saw something on Instagram the other day of this woman who just, posted a few interactions that she's had on Twitter or Threads or whatever it was. And it's these people that these, primarily men who were saying these horrible things to her, and her responses was to like, not just snarky, not being condescending, but genuinely like responding to something with kindness, like, oh, hey, I saw this and that's pretty cool. And it instantly diffuses it.
But it's also exhausting, right? Like it's also, I've been doing that my whole life.
I
And
can't do
I
it.
think at a certain point,
I can't either.
right? At a certain point,
Although
it's
I
just
don't
like,
usually engage. I say it out loud, but I don't type it. I let it go. So.
That's the best way to do it. If you can't respond to it with kindness, then the best next best thing is to just don't respond at all because it'll die with the lack of oxygen.
Well, and I think nastiness, I had to get off social media around that same time that things started shifting with We Say the Quiet Parts, because I had just made that decision to put my body out there. And I had, wrote a book again about my experience, not saying that was how everyone should have done it, but I took so much heat, so much negativity towards me when I had my whole life been bullied for that. I just couldn't do it anymore. So I had to, again, for mental health, I had to
Separate.
separate. And it sucked because, again, as being a writer, you're so isolated. And that connection of social media, talking to other writers, talking to readers, it was my way of having more of a social life. But when that social life comes with pain or triggering
It's not
or
worth it.
trauma, or you have to step away from it. So I hope one day we can have that be that good place again where we can connect and discuss books. Like, I love that. Like, let's talk about this. I love that. But let's take a lot of this negativity and hurling insults at each other out of it, because at the end of the day, I don't think that anything good can ever, ever come from that. I really don't.
I think a lot of it, from what I'm seeing, comes from an increase in an inability to tolerate
Each other.
any kind of a difference, where I like this, you like that, so you're wrong for liking that. Even though we both like something that's relatively
Truly
the same
similar.
thing, if we were to speak to each other about what we have in common, we could get along. Maybe not be friends, but we could get along by discussing things that we have in common. But instead, we're focusing on the differences, and I'm vilifying you and alienating you and othering you because you don't like the same thing that I do the same way that I do. And then I'm going to respond to you with vitriol and insults and trying to make you feel less than because I want to feel better about myself. And that's just, it's toxic. We don't all have to agree. We're not ever going to agree. You fill a room with 100 people and give them all the same questionnaire, you're going to get
And
100
every
different.
single person answers differently.
And I just wonder who it is, because again, I talk to readers. I talk to fellow authors. I talk to bookstore owners. I talk to, everyone who's involved in this community. And they're all like, oh, we hate it. We used to love Instagram. We used to love these reader groups, but now they got something crazy happen and we just can't be there anymore. And I'm like, well, who is this working for? Because, and I know these people face to face. I know these people. They're good people. We want to discuss this stuff. So I just hope at some point whatever
We
that
see
is,
that shift back
shift
to the love
back.
of
The
it.
pendulum has to swing the other way, and we can, and I know we're a good community. I truly believe that. I believe the book reading community is some of the most empathetic, caring, loving people you will ever meet. I love this community. But again, it only takes a little
One
group,
bad apple,
a bad apple that wants to stir stuff up. And it's not just in our demographic though. It's in my daughter's demographic. It's every part of this. And I think we just need to kind of stand up and say, you know what, this isn't acceptable anymore. We need to be kind to each other. We need to act for, especially for our kids. For our kids, we need to do that. So whenever I get on social media, even if there's something that really gets me, I try to say something positive, which a lot of people say then I'm like a Pollyanna, but you can ask my kids. That's what I'm always preaching to them. If we can't be kind in these environments and communities that we love, how can we expect our nation or the world to be that way? It has to start in our small communities, with our families, with our reading groups, with our circle of social media. So I think that's really, really important, because I want to see this community rise up again. I have a really fond kindness for Bella Andre, and she always used to say, one ship raises them all, right? We're trying to all come to this place where we can enjoy the things that we love together. So I hope that that happens, and soon, because I hate people that are leaving this community or leaving the book world because they feel like there's not a place for them or they're not accepted. And I want everyone to feel that, because that's how I felt, especially because so many of us, I know I've talked to people at signings that say, I was the kid that did not have a lot of friends, and these books were my friends. These books were how I learned about relationships through, like healthy, good relationships through. So I think it's, we want to have that continue to be a place where we can come to and feel safe.
And that has always been a part of our ethos as authors, that every book we try to intentionally not preach. We've always tried to not be preachy. I will freely admit it, that if it ever does get preachy, that's
It's
me.
you.
Pastor's kid. I'm very literally a pastor's kid. But not be preachy, but try to put lessons in there that we have learned and bake them into the story so that it's not preachy, so that it's not somebody up on a soapbox, but put it in the dialogue, put it in the plot, put it in the scenes where these people are learning something about life, about love, about interaction, about redemption, about making choices that can improve your life. And for us, that's about how love can improve who you are, that
Changes you.
you
Love
can
changes you,
find acceptance and a redemption in the right person, but oftentimes that requires you looking at yourself and being honest with yourself about yourself. And that's a very hard thing to do.
Well, and your new book, like it Tupac Ain't Old for This, like you have these two characters are very like they're close-ish in age, like, but they have very different backgrounds, very different styles of life, very different like relationship journeys. We have like the widower and then this woman, Morgan, who has been through some stuff, and like even 18 years later, she's still dealing with those reactions and the insecurities that were brought on by some of her past. And like she has some traumatic like responses to things as the book plays out. But one thing I really like is the gentle way that you dealt with those and the fact that there was no expectation of fixing it.
Oh, I don't think you, I don't think, again, as someone who comes from a long life of trauma, a long life of abuse and difficulties and again, finding out truly who I am very late in life, I've realized that I don't think you can fix it. I don't think you ever truly heal. I think it's more about acceptance, supporting yourself through those challenges that you have come through. And that's something that we've learned, again, I think mostly through our relationship, that we have to be able to, again, see ourselves, see our partner, learn how those things can come together. And it's not necessarily like I'm going to fix you. It's that I'm going to love you regardless of the fix or not, but I'm going to do whatever I can to support helping you get through those things that have been troubling in your life. And that again is something that I think is so hard. But I've seen it in my parents. They had a very difficult times in their marriage and they worked did the hard work. They committed to each other. They've been together since they were 14 years old and they're happier now than they were then. And so I do think that there definitely is that ability to, not necessarily fix each other, but love each other to a point where those things aren't as hard anymore. And it does take a very nuanced sensitivity from a partner, which is hard to
Yes.
find.
It's a lot of it is, from my perspective, is influenced by the fact that it's taken me a long time in our relationship to sort of really realize and internalize that there's nothing that I can say or do that's going to fix or change or heal the things that she has been through. And those, not to say they don't have anything to do with me, of course they do. I'm her husband and her best friend and her business partner, but they don't. That's her life experience. Nothing that I say or do is going to change the effect that those experiences have had on her psyche, on her emotions, on her physicality, because we're all one system. Our mind and our hearts and our bodies and our love of art and our fear of commitment and the way we hold tension in our shoulders or our jaw or our bowels, those are all interconnected. It's one interconnected thing. And the way she experiences all that is unique to her. And there's nothing that I can do to fix that. But what I can do is be understanding of those things, of learn her and understand the things that trigger her and try really hard to avoid them and apologize when I don't, because and commit to trying harder the next time because I'm going to step on those triggers. It's full of landmines. And when you have been through trauma, especially, people go through different levels of it. Some people have a more charmed life than others, but she's been through a lot of stuff, and so she has triggers that sometimes I step on. And I have to be aware that that's not my fault that that happened, but if I continually step on that trigger, then that is my fault.
And I think, again, I don't think I'm unique here. I feel like, especially for our core readership, I think we get a lot of people that are really looking for that partner that says, I know I can't fix you, but I'm just going to love you. I'm not going to try to make everything better because I can't, but I'm going to be beside you and do what I can. All the time he'll say to me, is there anything I can do? I'm like, just be here. And sometimes for me, it can't be too close. It can be maybe the next room, but I just need to know that he's there if I did something. And I think a lot of our readership likes that quality of our writing because we've lived it. I understand it, and not everything is just a ra easily wrapped up happily ever after, because like we said, that necessarily doesn't get all fixed and better, and you just, suddenly are a different person with no pain.
Well, and you have
Still
a
there.
reality like where relationships are hard. They take a lot of work. Like my husband and I, we've been together, it'll be 20 years this summer.
Congratulations. That's
Congratulations.
so
Yeah.
wonderful.
And but they have not been like 20 glowing years of delightfulness. Like there have been hard years. We've had trauma in our lives. It's how we dealt with it. But it's not easy. And I think that that's one thing I love about your books is there's no cookie cutter way that these relationships develop in the fact that like you have such a vast variety of character styles and character types and what these characters have been through, which sometimes we don't get that from authors. We get kind of like the same formula, but the two of you do not give us that. You give us a wide variety of people because no two people are the same.
Well, and that's again part of the reason why we love indie publishing. I mean, when we first hit New York Times with Falling Into You, our agent, who I love her so much, Kristen Nelson, said to us, just keep writing that book over and over and over again. Just, you need to hit that repeatedly. That's what you got to do. And I tried. And here's what I've also found is that, again, that's a huge part of my ADHD, is that I just can't. I literally try so hard. We would try. We would plot it out. I would start writing. We would start going at it. And I was just like, no, this doesn't work. So, I think that that's also something that is one of the benefits, because I don't think, I'll be very honest, well, I know that none of our books would have been traditionally published. I don't think a single one, because there's always an element of it that is not as palatable. And so then it's not as marketable. And so, again, I get it. I know that's a business decision or whatever have you, and it's our business decision that we're going to keep writing that in a different way, a different character, because that's what excites us. That's what inspires us. When we go out, a lot of times it's literally just we sit there and observe people.
I love a good people watch.
I mean, and listen, we've done it sometimes where it's probably too much, and then we end up paying for a couple's dinner because we're like, oh, we literally just sat
That
here and
was
we sat their
weird.
entire conversation. Ah. So, that does happen. I'm sorry to those couples, but it really is interesting for us, and I guess also why I love watching reality TV, to see how different and unique everybody's love story is. It's just what excites me. I tell him all the time, some autistics like have their tism as Star Wars, and mine is love. Mine is the human connection. That's just what I love. Every time I talk about it, I get excited. I could talk about it all day. It's just what runs through my veins. So, I think it's very interesting that the thing that is the hallmark of romance is the exact opposite of kind of where we tend to navigate, where we tend to go. It's just we love that unique, different, those that feel like they'll never find love again, the hopeless that find it. And speaking of good reality shows, if you haven't watched Love on the Spectrum, because I know there is another season of that coming out, if you want to see the most authentic, truthful display of two people falling in love, that is it. I mean, it makes me want to cry just thinking about it. But these are people that are just so authentically them. And when they come together, it's the most beautiful thing I think I've ever witnessed.
It really truly is. She loves reality TV and I
You
don't,
begrudgingly watch it.
but a long, long time ago, it became apparent that we have sort of differing taste in TV sometimes, and we've learned to find things that we both enjoy.
He loves The Real Housewives, by the way. Just like, let's put a note on that, okay? You went to a Lu Countess Luann concert with me and loved every single second of it, okay?
It's been a lot of like, at this point, I have been watching these shows with her because it was either I go sit in another room by myself and watch the thing that I want to watch by
Oh,
myself,
stop.
or we find something that we want to watch together, and I just go, okay, just turn on what you want and I'll figure it out. And a lot of times that's been, Real Housewives or whatever. And so yeah, I know the Real Housewives franchises better than I do sports statistics. I
Yeah,
know more
he
about
sure
Candace
does.
Luann
Yeah,
than
he
I do
sure
Alex Rodriguez. Like,
does.
not even remotely close. But because it is fascinating to see the way humans interact. It's fascinating to see how people respond to situations. And for us storytellers, we are gratified and we write what we want to see. We try to write things that are satisfying to us. And for me as a reader, I love a good payoff. I love it when a writer sets up this thing and it's something that you want to happen, but it doesn't happen easily. And there's a lot of setbacks. And when it does, it's a big, like, yes, this feels good. And so for us, a lot of the time when we are writing a story, we try to set up this problem between these two people that is stopping them from being together. And so then by the end of it, you feel gratified. You feel like this has paid off. These 120,000 words that I just read through has fulfilled
His
something
purpose.
inside of me.
Yeah. And again, with us, I don't think it's special to us, but when we're watching something, when we're reading something and that doesn't happen, we immediately, it's like the most ick turn off you've ever seen two people experience. We've watched series before where we see where things are headed and we know it's going to lose readership. And I'm like, dude, why are you writing this? Call us. We will tell you what to do. You know, like this is not the way. And you know, when you kill off beloved characters is the best way to make me just the most angry person you've ever
Glenn.
seen. Glenn,
Oh, I still am reeling from that.
I'm still angry.
I will never, ever, ever get over that. Ever, ever. It's
That
just like
was a really hard one.
so bad. And then, you know,
Really hard
we're so
one.
excited to watch the Yellowstone spinoffs. And I heard spoilers about that. We won't say what, but like, I'm just like, I
Oh
can't.
no, I have not watched Yellowstone
Okay.
because it just I haven't
Yeah. Don't.
gotten into
Just don't.
that, and
Just
I
don't.
know like once I start I won't be able to stop.
Yeah.
But I have heard about
Yeah.
that
We can't do
choice. I'm
it.
like, why would they make that choice?
Think it's a suicide mission, and I will never understand it. But I think you just lose people that way. And I think, again, if you don't have a resolution at some point where those characters get what they have been looking for, what's the point? What is the point?
That was the big risk that we took with Falling Into You. That is the reason that that book never would have been traditionally published, is because we spent three chapters, 4.5 chapters, setting up this love story between Kyle and Nell, and then all of a sudden if he dies. Hopefully there's nobody
Well, I
listening
mean,
that
sorry for
hasn't
that.
done it. 15 years,
Hopefully,
people.
spoiler alert,
Right.
but he falls on him and kills him in chapter four. And I guess that might be hypocritical considering what we just said, but to us,
There's
it
still a
was
payoff, though. It's
there's that
still not
exactly. There
satisfying,
was a
Andy.
reason for it, there was a purpose to it. And, our life experiences taught us that if you go about things the right way, nothing is ever wasted. You don't believe that. As people of faith, that God ever wastes our pain,
No.
that it's always utilized somehow.
Somehow.
It's always going to teach us a lesson. It's always going to benefit us in some way. And if you go through life, even if you have a different belief system than we do, that's great. Believe whatever you through the day, and I'll respect that to my dying days, but it doesn't matter. But if you look at life and say, this is something traumatic that's happened to me, it's not right, it's not fair, it's not okay, but what can I take away from it that's going to make me a better person, that's going to help me grow, then at least that horrible thing hasn't been for nothing. It hasn't been wasted. And I think that's very true, and at least the way that we try to tell
Stories,
stories.
yep, for sure.
If something happens, it's for a reason. I guess that just goes to some of the lessons that I learned and all the, books on writing is that you can't ever put anything on a on the page that doesn't serve a purpose. If you have someone eating breakfast and you mention what they're eating, why? What's the purpose in that? You know, if you have a character visiting the bathroom, nobody cares about that unless it
There's a
furthers the plot.
reason, right? Yeah, that's one of our big tips to take away. Yeah, make sure there's a reason why your character is doing something, because if it's not important, we don't care. But I mean, I think in general, right now, we are at a point where we are so happy to be able to do whatever the beep we want with our characters and with our stories. It's a breath of fresh air to be able to say, I mean, and it's a freedom as an artist to be able to say, no, I don't want to do it that way. It's a privilege, and we don't take that for granted. And so we're going to keep kind of pushing it. I mean, you're going to see more weird characters, brown characters, LGBTQ characters, autistic characters, because, like I said, I think that's so important, especially right now, to see those people not only accepted, but supported and loved and championed. I think so often we teach our kids, accept this person, but we don't tell them how or show them how. And I think there needs to be more support, especially in this arena of moms and women that are writing, where we say, you know what, this person might be a little bit annoying because their personality is really stuck on this one thing, but guess what? That person also deserves love, and this person is so full of amazing things, and their life has had so many cool aspects to it that we want to explore. That's, I guess, for us right now in this day, the most exciting thing and important thing that we're doing.
So what's next for you two?
Oh, we are writing a really hard book right now. We are writing Beast, which is the finale of the Sin series. And that book started with the Madame X trilogy. And that was what, 15 or 20, 10 years ago, over 10 years ago. So we have had this book cooking, which is really hard for me mentally for 10 years. And it's taking a little bit longer than our typical book just because there's so much history there. We have to go back and review, what did this character say? What did this character do? Why did they do that? So there's a lot of that research aspect
Pulling
to
on
it.
threads from two different series. Oh, and Madame X was just a trilogy, but Club Sin now, that series, this is, I think, the
Eighth, ninth,
eighth, yeah, the eighth book. And so then that's eight different, things that
Tying
we're
everything
trying to
in.
pull in. Different things, that we set up that we have to remember to pay off because I hate it when we get an email saying like, "What about this?" And like, "Oh crap, I forgot about that thread. We forgot we introduced this and forgot to tie it back in." All
That's
these.
probably my fault. That's the ADHD of me. I mean, just those, if I don't write it down, it doesn't really stay in my brain. But it's just more challenging. I mean, and same thing with the Bad series, where I'm book 22 of that series, and I'm like, okay, what happened in book three? I don't really
And
quite
without
remember.
recycling
Old things,
characters and plot lines, like, the thing about plot is that, 3,000 years ago, King Solomon wrote, "There's nothing new under the sun. Every story has already been told."
Yeah, oops.
That has been true since the beginning of time. It's, you can't ever, ever write a truly original story. But what you can do is provide a unique spin, a unique take on the things that have always been true. If you were to write a skeleton outline of a story, and again, I've said this already in this interview, give it to 10 people,
They're
10
all going to
writers,
write it. You'll get
you'll
10
have
different
10
stories.
vastly different stories. And that's what makes this industry so amazing. But you have to be aware of that. You have to be cognizant of the fact that I'm telling a unique thing from my perspective, and so you have to stay true to what your perspective is.
I mean, that, and again, that is why sometimes we push off those books, because they're harder to write. And our readers are always like, we're ready for the next one. I mean, seriously, I'm not kidding you. I have readers that the day after we publish, they are emailing
Where's
me,
the
when
next
is
one?
the next one? I'm
Well,
like,
and you guys
girl,
have jumped
no.
around quite a bit the last couple
We do like a
years.
cycle. Usually we do a three series cycle. And then sometimes we'll throw a standalone in there. And I know that wait is kind of hard for some people, but what people don't remember is that there's some people that takes them a little bit longer to read through that. So we're trying to give them a little bit of time to catch back up. We've noticed that, the read through is sometimes a little bit slower on some series. I probably because of the wordiness, maybe.
Well, it's also, I think, a function of us, of our attention span.
Spans, yeah.
It's the way we do things now is sort of like the culmination of a lot of experimenting, because we both, have this inability to stick with any one thing for too long. So we have to write the super emotional something. That's something we got to get out every once in a while.
But then
We
we
got to
need
write the
time.
action. We got to
Well,
write
and like you get
funny.
very inv I'm sure you get
Yes.
invested in that book and that series, and it's hard to leave that, but you need to reset. So it's like you can't stay in that world for a long That's
time.
100% it. And again, those really emotional books, those really physical books, because for me, it's like I am in my head doing what that character's doing. And so when we get to a point where we're done, I'm like, oh, okay, I need a break. I need to, again, reset, regroup, get into the next world. And that just takes a little bit of time. And this book in particular, because of all those elements, because this is a very tortured character. And it's funny because when we pitched this to, we did Madame X as a traditionally published trilogy, which we have that back now, which is why we're writing this. But we pitched to them Beast as a trilogy that was right after Madame X. And then we said to ourselves after they were like, no, we're good, we're like, we want to write this. But that character needed time. That character, had we jumped in from X right into Beast without there being time in between, he would have never been able to handle what was coming for him. He needed that space and time. And so writing the rest of the Sin series leading up to him, giving him that space and time, I think is going to be such, like, it's going to be a better book because we allowed that to happen. So sometimes it's not the way we necessarily thought we were going to write that or how that character was going to evolve. They kind of surprise us. And this was exactly that. That's why I'm excited too to write
Echo the
Echo the
Stars.
Stars, because had we written Echo the Stars, 15 years ago when everyone was wanting us to write it, we would not have felt the freedom or the ability to write those characters authentically the way we do now. So I think hopefully the readers have been willing to wait for it and are willing to allow us that time and space with those characters to fully understand them and get to the point where the story is what it's
I
supposed to
think
be.
there's been a bit of I guess space made in readership, and I think in criticisms in writers doing storylines that aren't necessarily from their lived experience. That's something that we've struggled with, where we've taken big swings on characters that aren't from our lived experience, and we've got a lot of blowback on
So
that.
much.
And so then it's like, okay, we can't win because we're accused of whitewashing and every character is the same. Okay, cool, we'll try to do something, and
But then
we'll
you get criticism when you try to go
then we
outside.
do right. Well, okay, we try really hard. I know I try really hard to investigate and to research and to, make these characters and these places feel real and feel authentic as much as I can without having been through that. It's a very fine line.
But even if you get pushback. I mean, again, this is just one of the benefits for us of being indie. But when we've talked to publishers, it is, you aren't this. And I go, okay, cool. But my children are. I have lived this experience through them with them, but that's not your voice. But
But it
sometimes
kind of
it
is,
is. So I think we also kind of need to be, as writers and as readers, let the author tell the story of their heart. Let the author tell the story that is coming out of them uniquely as it is. Because when we start stifling people and saying, you're not allowed to write that because it's not you. And I'm like,
Well, but at the
you
same rate, how do
understand.
we know it's not them? Just because they didn't come out and say, this is my life experience, how do we know that?
People say to you, we really wanted to write these LGBTQ characters. And 15 years ago, when we wanted to write this, people were like, don't do it. You can't do it. You're not LGBTQ. I go, how do you know I'm not? Where have I ever said, just because I'm in a heterosexual straight marriage, you have no idea my lived experience. So I think we need to stop doing that because, quite honestly, A, it's not your business. And like I said, it is the story of someone's heart that is the most important. And what those characters look like are really authentically to those characters. When we sit down and write characters, people say this all the time to us, like, the color of hair or the eyes or whatever on the cover is different. And I'm like, okay, this is how that worked. A lot of times we do a cover ahead of time, or we see a picture and that's like an inspiration. And then as we write, the character is a little bit different than what we expected. And I realize now, I think a lot of that is the way my brain functions, but I just let the character speak to me. And it might not be exactly how I envisioned it. And that might be a change in sexuality. That might be a change in lived experience, religion, who they choose as a partner, what they've done. And I, as a person who's trying to get that story out, I don't censor myself. I let myself do that. And so I kind of urge indies to not let that scare you from the story you are supposed to write. And if publishers want to do that, fine. Again, a business decision, let them. But if you have a story that is, in you, then I hope we just allow ourselves more freedom to present that as it is.
Right. I think my view on it is that you like you said, you have to let people tell the story that is from their heart and that is speaking to them. And obviously, if something is problematic, it should be called out. If we were to write something that is offensive, it would be accidental, it would be unaware, but let us know because we don't want to offend anybody. But let us know, like, this isn't the way it is, and that happened. We wrote a character and there was something there. It wasn't like wildly, but we did have a character, we did have a
Someone was
reader.
offended by it. And if someone is offended by it, we take that to heart. We want our readers to feel respected and loved and supported. And so we're absolutely willing to make adjustments in our writing if something is. And again, a lot of times we don't, my kids will tell you every day at dinner, we say things that we don't realize are now offensive. Just as an example, our kids, I'm from theater, and kids used to be called a certain thing in theater if they were on the tech side of things. And now I've just found out yesterday that's now offensive. And I'm like, okay, that's a small thing in terms of, but that happens every day. So again, for us, I feel like if there's a way to do it without blasting that author on social
Social
media,
media.
thankfully this
Canceling that.
person just emailed us and said that. Have to know this is kind of, and which I think is the absolute appropriate way to do it.
Absolutely.
Well,
I
cancel culture is such a big thing
oh,
now.
yes.
didn't want to get into that too deeply, but I think it's a very real thing that if you try something, you got to give people grace. Like, if someone has tried something, look at the intent behind
Find
it.
it.
Even if there's something in there that maybe not ring totally true because they didn't grow up in that particular whatever it might be, if they're still presenting it in a way that they're trying to be respectful, they're trying to be inclusive, then approach that person in that same spirit. Okay, look, I recognize that you're trying to be this, that, and the other thing, but this would be the better way
We
to
should do
say
it,
that.
right?
One thing that we learned was, referring to skin color in food terms. That's not palatable to people. Palatable. Okay, wrong choice of
I
word.
saw
But
you. That was an
you're, I get
unintended.
canceled for that. Thank you, dear.
And like the term exotic, that's another one that I think rubbed a
That
lot of
was the
people the
one that
wrong
we
way.
absolutely changed. Yeah. And because, like, to me, I want to be exotic. I'm like, hey, that sounds good. But then to other people, it's not. And so that, like, is a personal term that I thought was okay, but then that's not. So those things we're always learning. And I'm
Well, and like
shy away
things are
from that.
like the world is constantly adapting and
Changing.
changing, and that's the thing. Like, even like when like my kids like crisscross applesauce, like that's how they sit. Like, we had a very different terminology for that, and it's one of those things where like
Same.
you don't think about that because like it was normal for us, and now it's like, wait, that is not okay, and just like just little things like that, and it's constantly evolving.
And I think that's important. I think it's great. I'm happy when my, I'm not happy, but thankful when my kids tell me that, because Lord knows I need to stop sometimes from whatever I'm about to say or do. But I do think it's hard sometimes as writers to kind of know for sure how every reader is going to take something. It's almost
Well,
impossible to know.
and honestly, some people are offended by some things and other people are not offended by the exact same thing. So a lot of it is like a personal level too. It's like, and so it like as an author, I'm sure it's hard to appease to the masses because it's like there one person might take offense, but these 50 other people do not. So, I mean,
And it's
it is
hard
a
for me because
hard.
I'll remember that one person. I mean, I'll forget the 50 that are like, I love that part. It's the one that I'll think about. pretty much forever, is the one that comes to me saying this was really hard for me or this, and that's a risk you take, I think, you know, and we're a two-person company. So any of the only, you know, we do have editors and we do have, you know, readers, but really those decisions are made here and sometimes they're wrong. And I'm not the kind of person who won't say when I've done something that I shouldn't have done or that was wrong or wasn't exactly the way it should have been done or said. And it's we're growing always as writers and readers in that way. So I think it's important conversations to have, but I really urge readers to maybe do it in a way that is sensitive to the writer too. Because it is hard for us because things are constantly changing and we want to make the reader happy. I mean, we're not trying to make the reader upset when they're reading our books. We want to inspire and we want to give hope and love and joy. We're not trying to make them angry.
But we are trying to challenge. You
Yes.
know, Oscar Wilde said, if I'm not offending a third of my audience, then I'm doing something wrong. Oscar Wilde took joy in being divisive and challenging the status quo as someone who was openly gay at a time when that was wildly
Unaccepted.
unaccepted and criminal. But I think his point is that his deeper point in that quote is that you're never going to make everybody happy. There's always going to be somebody that's going to take offense to what you're saying or doing. You know, when we wrote the Ever
Oh
trilogy,
my
I
God.
don't think we anticipated the level
Of hatred.
of hatred that we were going to get for that, but it was still a story that we felt was important to write, and I stand by that series because, you know, people. A lot of people have a very
Strong.
serious, strong, very, very send us death threat level strong.
Strongness in the opposite direction, too. I mean, there are people I could name to you right now that still write me emails years later. I never will forget these characters. It's my favorite story. And we had a retailer, you know, literally call us and say, we've never had a trilogy ever on our platform that has been read through as much as this trilogy. So I know that there's a good part to that, but the mental trauma that I experienced from people that were so angry with me personally
Wrote
because
instead.
we wrote that story, like just so much anger. And I get it. I mean, I know if you've been in those experiences before, it's painful and it hits you in a different way, but I have been. So, you know, when I was writing it, yes, there was, but I knew it was coming in the end, and I knew there was a purpose and a reason, and I wanted that couple to be understood in a way that maybe they wouldn't have.
Well, but art in itself, like writing is an art in itself is so subjective. Like you can
Absolutely.
sit seven people in front of a painting and
Absolutely.
every single person has a different visceral reaction to it. And that's part of it. Like art is subjective. Whether like how you feel, how you interpret, how you experience it is vastly different person to person.
And for me, when someone comes up and says, I'll never forget this, I will never forget this story, I will go to my deathbed still thinking about this. That to me, you can't tell me anything that's more complimentary. You can give me any New York Times, Wall Street Journal, whatever, you
Like,
know,
those are great,
audience
but the fact that you personally touched this one.
yes, if someone is remembering something that we put out into the world, that is literally the best feeling you can give me. So unfortunately, those of you that had negative reactions to that series, I still know you're never going to forget it. You're always going to be thinking about it. You're always going to be like, if I was in those shoes, how would I have done things differently? Or how would this have happened in my life? So I think that to me, it's a double-edged sword because I love it and I hate it at the same time. And again, the people that say this is my favorite trilogy, I'm like, oh, let me introduce you to Peggy Sue over here, who literally wanted to kill me because I wrote it. You know, this is where we're at. I'll cross this whole long spectrum of things, but I think it's meaningful. It's meaningful if you remember it. I don't want to be one of those authors that you remember as the person. I don't want people to remember Jacinda Wilder. I want them to remember Nell and Colton. I want them to remember these characters, you know, that are just lingering with you through your life that make you think. That's what we're going for. So if we did
We
that.
never believed that the only thing you should ever feel when you read one of our books is happy,
Happy.
because that's not life. And we want our books to represent life. We want it to be a version of life where you know that it's going to be okay in the end. That at the end of this book, at the end of one of our books, hopefully you feel better than you did
You started.
when you started. Because at the end of the day, you saw that even though on page 114,
Things look
you were
good.
sobbing your eyes out and
Things
you
look
could
good.
not see how anything could ever feel better again. But the fact is, we feel pride that we made you feel something so intensely because you stared at some funny marks on a piece of paper for a while. You know, that's an immense compliment to us that something that we put out in the world has engendered these intense emotions in you. And I think that's cathartic because sometimes I know I have a hard time processing how I'm feeling about things. And one of the ways that I do that is through fiction, is through watching TV, is through watching movies, is through reading books. And that's what we want to do is help people process things that you
They're
didn't
hard
know
to
you needed
process.
help processing.
It's therapy for me. I mean, quite honestly, it's better than any therapist I've ever gone to because a lot of the things that readers read that they're like, this really touched me or moved me, it's literally coming from my own lived experience. It's coming from a pain that at a time I thought I couldn't handle. I thought I couldn't process. I thought I would never be able to get past it. And that's what's on the page there. So a lot of times if they're feeling that, I'm like, yes, I felt it. But for me, what I've learned in life is that with all good comes some bad, and with all bad comes some good. And when things have been really, really bad, I know, again, like that pendulum swinging the other way, something really, really good can come from it if you allow it to. And so in those really heartbreaking moments in our stories, we want it to feel as heartbreaking as we can because that's real life. We want you to feel like I can't keep going. I can't handle this. It's so hard. How is this character ever going to find happiness? But they do because we have. That's literally why we're writing that. And I want to inspire people because, you know, as someone who's dealt with a great deal of depression, a great deal of struggling with wanting to self-harm, that when you read these books, you have that hope. You have hope for the next day. You have hope for life and days that are to come. So, you know, again, if readers are feeling those intense emotions, feeling those, you know, ups and downs of life through our pages, we think that that's important, and we don't shy away from those scenes, those difficult scenes.
Because it's also very true that the pendulum swing, I guess, is I think what I want to, you know, expand on is that when you feel one thing, the opposite is going to feel just as powerful. So no such thing as gentle heartbreak. Heartbreak is violent. Heartbreak is excruciating. And so if we're going to put heartbreak on the page,
It's going to be heartbreak.
that heartbreak is going to rip you to shreds. And that's what it should be. But that's for a reason. And the reason is that once you feel the violence of that heartbreak,
Put you back
the
together.
hope and the redemption is going to feel that much stronger because, you know, always darkest before the dawn. Well, no, it's darkest at midnight when you're in the middle of the night. Right before the dawn is when things start to lighten up.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, a lot of times, not only am I putting on page my lived experience, but people close to me, and this book, The Two Pecking Old for this book, is very, very loosely based on an experience I had with a friend who passed, that then they had charity hockey events for, and I think a lot of times we do as humans just want to shy away from those really painful, hard, difficult losses. It's normal to want to do that, to kind of forget about it. But if we don't show that and then show what good can come from that, you know, I've lost, especially so many young friends in my life I've lost to cancer that have left children behind. And I think about that every day. I pray for those kids every day. And knowing that their family could have that kind of love again, experience that, I know that my friends would want that for their kids and their partners. I know they. So there's such a, like, just a healing that happens, I hope, in the reading of that I experienced in the writing of that, because that's what you want in life. You want there to be that happy ending. You want there to be that love that overcomes all, that you know, is so powerful. So it feels good knowing that people are getting at least some of that.
And I know that's you know a theme that we've been toying with for a while, and there's a story that we have been batting
Oh,
back and forth.
yeah.
That's another one of those ones that I think
Going to be hard to write.
it's going to be hard to write, and we've been talking about it, we've been plotting it out, but really what we've been doing is psyching ourselves
For
up
the
to go
pain.
there.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like an actor who's, got to take on this super tragic role that is going to leave them emotionally drained by the time they're done with filming. For us, it's the same thing, that by the time we're done with this story that we've had on our hearts for a long, long time, it's going to be tough, but I think it'll be worth it. But we just have to be in the right place to be able to put.
Can wreck you if you don't. I mean, we've had situations where we had a book on I always say, like, the next up, the batter's box book, that we're planning on writing, and then something will happen in our personal lives that we can't go there. We have to put it off, because I know mentally, if I'm in a lower place and dealing with stuff that's really hard, and then I put myself in that world
Into
that's
that
hard,
character.
I'll be a mess, and I then can't be the wife he needs, the mother my kids needs. So, that's another really hard aspect of being a writer that I'm not sure is really talked about much, but like the physical and emotional toll on dealing with these really hard, difficult topics, and then, being able to just be the mom and be the person that you need
It's
to
hard
be.
to turn that off at the end of the
That's
day.
really hard, especially if you're hyper focused in that world.
That's why we could never just write
Write
the
that.
emotional books out.
Yeah, it's really hard. Nick, poor Nicholas Sparks, we're thinking about you, buddy. But yeah, it's just really something that I think is a challenge to have to go back to those really hard places. And again, for me, I can't write authentically if it's not something that's drawing for me. I mean, these books that people are talking about, The Cabin, The Ever Trilogy, Falling Into You, all of those books came from real life experiences that inspired those stories. So, hard ones. So I think, for me, again, that's something good coming from those tragic things, is people understanding each other better by reading it, or understanding or processing from that.
Well, and on that little pause, I'm going to say thank you for
You're welcome.
joining me in this chat. It has been wonderful having you two back and chatting about all the author things.
Love it. We love being here. I think you are like the most consistent chats we've had. And it always just like we're, talking to you and you're getting something from it, and everyone listening, we get a lot from it
Absolutely.
too. So thank you for having
Well,
us. We
that makes me feel good. I appreciate that. And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.